Yay, bravo, bravo.
Blog Talk Radio.
And the crowd went narcoleptic. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I like the unknown universe. The older I'm getting, the more of the unknown universe I hope there is. I'm really confident there's a lot of unknown universe out there. We're a little past Saturn and right next to Uranus. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky and Alabama, as a public service presentation. Hoyt does that. He's the station manager, and Tony is the salesperson. It's a two-man show. Hoyt hasn't taken a day off, and I think it's going on 10 years now, and he doesn't remember the last time he took a day off. I think it's quite amazing that he can do that. I've seen him through incident and accident and illness, and he always shows up for work. He cannot not take a day off. I think it's insane. That's why I like the guy. I can relate to him on a certain level. And Tony brings in the money, and he keeps the show on the road. But they do this as a public service. They believe in what Rum Radio is trying to accomplish, that's sponsorship and giving back to the next sufferer. And I believe when we're in that service, we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? Also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I'd greatly like to introduce my co-host, Harold B. He's a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the family are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation. A lot of the things, or most of the things that are happening today is because children are not being taught correct principles. Growing up is abandoned lot weeds. They're spending copious amounts of time on the internet, reprogramming their brain in a two-dimensional reality, unable or unwilling at this point, or actually unable to connect up in an analog world. We live in an analog world. No lack of intimacy. When the kid goes out with a gun and starts killing people, he half expects the bodies to disappear and the blood to be wiped away, and because it's all about him. It's all about self again, and it's a shame that that's happening. So I believe Harold's work in trying to rescue these families from the abyss of this horrible disease of addiction and alcoholism, where my experience is most crimes are centered around that platform, is a valuable and praiseworthy work. Harold?
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Joseph. It's nice to be with you on the air again, and I think you're right. Screen time is a huge problem. That's one of the problems with families these days. I've had a lot of especially troubled families in my practice this week, and it's the trickle-down effect. The research shows now that the average kid 8 to 18 years old average spends 7 hours, 38 minutes a day on screen time. That's either movies or internet or on their phone, texting. 7 hours and 38 minutes, 7 days a week. That's over 50 hours of screen time a week, more than a full-time job. And now some of it is to do their assignments for school, but that's a rather small portion. So you're right. When it comes to boys learning how to talk to girls, they don't learn that on screen time. They learn that in the analog world. And so a lot of boys have no idea how to talk to girls. The other thing that's happening a lot is there's so much yelling in the house. Now, I must admit, when I have four kids that are grown, nine grandkids, and when I was parenting, I was a yeller. But it's damaging for the kids. The what we're seeing is that if the parents will increase the structure, see, parents have two big jobs: keep the kids healthy and safe, show the kids how to succeed in the real world, how to be people of integrity and character. So the kids learn by example, and they will copy everything the parents do while ignoring what the parents say. So that's where
or
we're
don't
at.
Do.
Right.
Or
they
don't do.
They really respond to the lack of things in their world. So parents, we've got to calm down, put things down on paper, have some house rules, and really be consistent with those, because that's how the world works. We know pretty much what to expect. If we break a law, we've got to do the same thing at home. So that's enough about that. You want to take us through the third step prayer, Joseph?
Sure. Thank you, Harold. I think this is important stuff. It also leads the screen time also leads into another addiction. We're not going to cover that today, but there I find hand in glove is pornography. For every, I think, 100 movies in Hollywood, there's something like 11,000 pornographic movies made, and this sets the kids up who are living on the screen that long for pornography, and it's an addiction, not of more than the same, but greater and with a greater and greater amounts of impact. So they start at one level and they continue on, and of course we're producing generations of these kids that are completely lost. So keep that in mind. It's on the website, The Demise of Guys. It's real. It's a good, interesting. It's not AA. It's not. We're not AA, by the way. We're not NA. We're not CA. We're probably closer to Narcoleptics Anonymous or Paranoids Anonymous. That's Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem with they nobody tell you where they hold the meetings. today, before I introduce him, we have a really special guest star. I consider all my guests special. Some people of note because they always have better jokes, and some just regular Joes. But all the miracles of recovery, and I have the opportunity to interview miracles. How cool is that? And this is Monty Meyer of Take 12 Radio, which is a recovery radio, and it's gone on for a long time. But we'll get into that in a minute. This is going to be really interesting, folks. If you're out there listening, this is a good one. This is a bookmark kind of deal. I'd like to start with the third step prayer. Although this is in the big book, which is the basic text for Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. I believe that the big book and the 12 steps are the template, which they are, the template of all 12-step recovery programs. This is it. Everything else has evolved from this basic text. So I like to go back to the basics, and that's what Rum Radio is about. It's a back-to-basics approach. Now, there's some fine other information. Al-Anon has conference-approved literature, and NA has their own books. I've never read it, but I'm sure, you know, it works really well for them. But we believe that the big book, I know, is a spiritually enlivened work. And how I know that is that because as my understanding grows, so does my ability to discern the material in the big book. A lot of people in recovery will say, wow, I never read that before, and I've read the big book several times. Who put that in? Well, we have a little genie that goes around at night and puts new things into the big book. It's really that your eyes of understanding have been open, and that's how you know it's a spiritual work. When I get a new sponsee, and usually someone who's gotten a beginner's chip, that's a desire chip, they made an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. And that's he's hot, or the girl is ready to go. They've made it the acknowledgement a problem exists. And I try to get a hold of them right away as soon as they do that, and I ask them, have you had enough? Yes or no. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no. And if I get two affirmatives, I continue, you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And the first thing I give them is Clancy 7 questions. You'll find the template on there on the how to find a sponsee on the website. Scroll down, print out the questions. Carry them with you when you're looking for a sponsee. Big book on page 89 says, go find a prospect and start working on them. Doesn't say have a prospect find you. Somehow we turned it into a dating service, but that's what the big book says. So I'm prepared. Luck is nothing more than when opportunity meets preparation. And I'm prepared. I give them, okay, here's Clancy 7 questions. I need you to answer these 7 questions. I need them back tomorrow. I get him back in a timely manner. He's demonstrated the fact that he's willing to go to any length and has taken simple instruction. No guarantee, but it's a good kickstart. And one of the first assignments, you need to get a home group, and I need you to get 30 men's names and phone numbers. 20 if you have to, 10 will work, but try to get some because most people don't answer their phone. We have phones with us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but nobody answers the phone. It goes to voicemail, so chances are you're going to need a couple names so you can get a hold of folks. These guys have agreed, men with men, women with women, when possible. We find that to be easier to relate, same gender. But if not, we work the steps. That's the bottom line. We work the steps, and then we let everything else flush out. But we find men gender proper works out the best. And I ask them to call one of these fellas every day to get used to picking up the 500-pound telephone, asking for help, which is hard for most alcoholics. We can do it all ourselves. Two, it connects them up with their home group, their fellowship, their lifeline. They're not always going to be able to reach a sponsor. They need other men's names. They get to know his name. He gets to know their name. Third, the third step prayer is also called a surrender prayer. It's going to encapsulate what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And fourthly, the fellow he's calling might have been considering picking up his first drink of alcohol, first hit of crack, whatever his disease is, and chances are he will not. No guarantees, but it gets your sponsee in service right away. And we find service to be the panacea for what ails us. And this is the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
Amen.
Yeah.
Thank you. One other point, something I came up with just recently. We do a preamble. It's in the big book on how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. To those who will not or cannot give themselves to this simple program, they're not at fault. They seem to have been blonde that way. I want to introduce Monty Meyer. Monty is one of those pillars we have in recovery. We don't have gurus. That's why I started. I use the word stepologist, but we have some folks that have given time, talents, and treasure in large amounts because they become passionate about doing the work. A form of a ministry, if you will, or you're on a mission. You turn your life into a mission and not an intermission. And these are some of the – and Monty's one of those kind of guys that is passionate about his recovery and passionate about helping the next man. That's a God-given gift that few get. So, Monty, tell us about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now.
Well, thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Howard. First of all, I just want to express my gratitude and honor to be able to come on your show. We're really colleagues is what we are, and we're doing very much the same thing. And what a privilege it is to be able to share in any way, shape, or form, any part of my story. And thank you for the kind words. I really, really appreciate that. Yeah, you know, things were always you know, coming up roses, you know. I mean, and I came from a family that I'm 57 years old, and I was raised in Petaluma, California, and I came from a family that was pretty doggone functional. I mean, it just wasn't a whole lot of things going on that you would necessarily associate with a dysfunctional family. You know, I probably could put some buzzwords on our family, just like anybody else can, but it wasn't really, really too bad, you know. I was adopted when I was 2 years of age, and so I have no medical record of my medical history as far as any kind of alcoholism or addiction. I haven't got a clue. It was a close adoption. We don't know. I suspect, though, that there was probably something going on genetically there and with my metabolism and so forth, because the very first drink I ever took, the very first one I ever took, I went to my dad's liquor cabin. He'd come home, you guys, he'd come home from work. He was city manager in Petaluma, California for like 20 years. That's a long time to be a city manager. And he would come home from work and he'd pour himself a shot of Christian Brothers brandy and he'd pour it in a glass of 7-Up. And he would maybe just take a couple of drinks out of the whole thing, and it would just relax him because it was an extremely stressful time. And I saw how that helped him through his day. And I was a little fat kid in junior high, and I got picked on a lot and beat up a lot. And I'm pretty much of a pacifist, so I really didn't fight back too much. And I thought, wow, you know, I mean, it helps him with his stress. Probably it'll help me with mine, you know. So I went to his liquor cabinet, and I poured myself a glass of Christian Brothers brandy. Now, you would think I'd know something was wrong right off the bat, but I didn't know anything about alcoholism or alcoholic thinking or any of that stuff. But this glass, you guys, was huge. I mean, it was really big. It was like probably double size of a regular coffee mug. I filled the thing to the top, and I guzzled it down. Now, I guzzled it down primarily because I didn't want to get caught, because I knew I was doing something wrong. But here's the deal. I loved it. I loved the way it made me feel. Instantly, I was warm. I was confident. I was secure. And I instantly poured myself another one. Before it even had time to get me drunk, I poured myself another one and down that one. I was getting ready to go to a school dance. I was in my underwear. I came out to the living room, and I talked about the philosophies of life with my parents for the next hour. They thought that was pretty interesting. They didn't have a clue. But that launched me. Yeah, it was pretty funny. That launched me into, you want to talk about being launched into a fourth dimension, and not a good one. That was, I believe today I have, my body is different than some people's. It's got something that happens to it called the phenomenon of craving when alcohol was introduced, and that was the spark that lit the fire. And from that point on, I would use alcohol as the great security blanket, you know. And I was popular. Of course, it was in my own head. And sneaking alcohol to school and that kind of thing. And one thing led to another, and we've all heard the stories, and some of them are horrific, some of them are hilarious, some of them are both. I will give you one. I will tell you one real quickly here, a story of alcohol bravery. I was in my early 20s, and I decided that my drinking buddy did not need to be in jail, because I didn't have anybody to drink with. So I got myself a 3-piece suit from Salvation Army and a briefcase, and I went into the Hayward court system in Hayward, California, and I got him out on his own recognizance posing as an attorney.
Wow, that's brave. Holy cow.
Yeah. 3 sheets to the wind, no less. And the kind of stuff I did. I was an alcohol daredevil. That's the kind of stuff. I mean, some people drove cars through the air. Some people did crazy stunts physically. I did those kind of things. And I was a con artist, man. And I went through life doing that and snowing my way through everything and until it finally caught up with me. And I couldn't do it anymore, and people were seeing right through it, you know. one of the last drinks I ever had of beer, I was sitting in Yosemite Park, California. I had a cabin there. I was working as a food and beverage assistant manager at a lodge cafeteria. And I was the most beautiful place on earth, right, living there. I'm sitting on the steps of my cabin drinking a beer, and nobody wanted to drink with me anymore. And I couldn't find anybody to join me. I was all alone. And I'm telling you, man, that is a horrible feeling. And so, you know, it took me through the streets. I lived 18 years on the streets and romanticized about it. I mean, and everything that came with the streets, the behavior, the sexual dysfunction, the all of it. And it almost took my life. And I was desperate, very, very desperate. And I thought, okay, all I knew what to do was run. So I ran away from the area that I was at. I drove, got in my car, and went up to Oregon, and it went in a blackout. And I woke up at a rest stop from Los Angeles, California to Oregon. I woke up at a rest stop outside of Albany, Oregon, called a buddy of mine that I'd gone to college with. I didn't even know if he lived in Oregon, and he ended up living two blocks away from where I called him. And he got me into a treatment center that was didn't know anything about addiction. It was truly a spiritual-based one. It helped later on through many, many relapses, you know, the experience of recovery and getting into a 12-step fellowship and learning about all this stuff and amends and my powerlessness and learning that if you're powerless and I'm powerless, zero plus zero is zero, and that doesn't work. So I needed the power greater than myself, and I was reintroduced to the God of my youth, and that was Christ. And a relationship took place, and it was intense. And many relapses followed that. So because I turned my will and my life over the care of God didn't mean that stopped. It was a process. But today I live a life free from the bondage of self, free from the bondage of alcohol. And today I know that it was simply an outward manifestation of an inward condition. Something bigger was going on inside of me, and that was my separation from God. That was the clincher. And today I have that, and it's a marvelous thing. It's the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to me, you guys, ever. Is
me
how,
too.
How this God could love me so much. I wasn't seeking after him. I didn't want anything to do with him. And he reached down and grabbed me by the scruff of the neck from the bottom of the ocean, pulled me out and said, I love you. I can't love you any less. I can't love you anymore. I love you perfectly, regardless of what you think of me. And that is where today my hope lies. And so the radio station thing, that came along a little later, but that's pretty much, you know, my story in a nutshell.
Amen.
How about the steps? That was a great story with the with the lawyer. That just gives you an idea of to the depth and the breadth of some of the intellect. Now, you're always going to hear at an AA meeting how smart alcoholics are. Now, the rest of the folks don't think we're all that smart. I'll show you. But there's a phenomenon that some people who do get sober do phenomenal things. Writers and playwrights.
Yes.
Million-dollar businesses and all this, and attorneys, and I think the second most powerful judge in Texas is one of us. So Ann Richards, we could blow her anonymity. I think she did herself. Governor of the state of Texas was one of us. And you don't know the capability of some of these folks. So that's a great story. Just buying a three-piece suit at the Salvation Army and fooling a judge that you know the law sufficient to get somebody out on their own recognizance. One of two things were happening. Once you were loaded and you had no fear, so the confidence level was off the map. And the other thing is you'd been in court long enough to know the jargon.
That's right.
Let me give the call in number. I don't know. We usually have another co-host, Carmen, who works the chat room, but I don't know what happened to Carmen. She's in Canada, though, so I have a feeling she had communication difficulty. So we don't. She's a great little. I always like to get a female perspective too. They say only young women have important things to say. Oscar Wilde. But I like to think that really depends on the age of the oldest man in the room.
Now, does Canada go on daylight time when we do?
Well,
I know, you
asked the best questions. I'll repeat it back to you. I haven't got a clue.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah. Mexico switches to daylight time 3 weeks after we do.
So we're
on there yet. But anyway.
Anyway, the guest call in is 949-534-0621. If you have any questions about for Monty or for me or for Harold or something about the website or something about recovery, we'd be more than happy to include you in the chat. Otherwise, if you just want to listen, that's great too. So, Monty, you got to the point where now I hear a conscious contact with God. The 12 steps Now, step one.
Go ahead.
You were going to say, now, I like to see this 1, 2, and 3. I always believe that you could do steps 1, 2, and 3 sitting at a traffic light as long as you're not in New York City. That's because the New York minute is made up of a series of annoyed nanoseconds. But other than that, you can probably do the first three steps. I believe that's the case. Now, was that your experience?
Yeah, it was. It was. And here, again, you know, I had a relationship in my head with God prior to that. I'd been to Bible college. I was drinking through Bible college. I hit it pretty good. I've been in ministry, and some I didn't say. I've been a pastor. I've been an associate pastor. I've been a youth pastor. I'd go to youth group meetings drunk. People didn't know, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I had a head knowledge, you know, and a little piece of a heart knowledge there. But when I was introduced to the steps, I took to them like a fish to water, because I was one of these guys that walked into the rooms and I saw God all over the place, and I said, right on, I'm staying. And, you know, when I heard people talk about Jesus openly in meetings, I was like, yes, this is the place for me. And it didn't scare me off, and we forget about the person that does identify with that. And so I stayed. And when my sponsor, my first sponsor took me through the steps, he did exactly that. It was 1, 2, and 3. It was sitting in a little Girl Scout hut after the meeting was over, and he sat down and did 1, 2, and 3 with me, and we went and drove over to a little bridge and said the third step prayer on our knees, but see, the developmentation of those three steps, the flowering, the blossoming of those, came after working 4 through 12, and but I did have an understanding. I did have a spiritual experience right away, and for me, and it just blossomed, and it continues to blossom today. And so, what I learned from the 12 steps of the mothership from Alcoholics Anonymous was that there's no power, in my personal opinion, there's no power in the steps. The steps are a tool to show me my need for that power, that I need a power greater than myself. And so what they are powerful, but they're not what carry the power. God is what carries the power. And it showed me my need for that relationship with God that I had to go from my head to my heart, because I couldn't give it away until it went from my head to my heart. Because it was just intellectual Christianity. It was churchianity that I was spewing forth. It wasn't about God. And so when that happened through those steps, and I learned about inventory and amends and how free I could be, and that the 9-step promises came true as a result of working an amends process, and I didn't try to jump ahead, and I had a great sponsor. He took me through there word by word, letter by letter, and then what I saw was, I saw what I learned years ago, which was very similar to the four spiritual laws. You know, that we used to hand out tracts of back in Bible college. What I saw was a very, very biblical-based process, program. I can't say that about the fellowship necessarily, but the program was definitely that way. And I took to it right away, and it was awesome. It was awesome. It cleaned me out. It gave me a new life. I was literally, in the book, the big book says, was reborn. I was literally reborn. And I thought I'd been born again when I turned my will and my life over to Christ. I got born again, you guys. It was incredible. And so the steps showed me my need for that power, gave me that avenue to be able to tap into that power. See, today, I'm not powerless today, as long as I stay connected and stay in fifth spiritual condition with God. Left to my own devices, I don't got a clue. But I'm not left to my own devices today. I'm not. And when I stray, get off the path, guess what? You know, he's right there. He doesn't leave me. He never leaves me. He doesn't forsake me. And he's a free gift, and that's what's so awesome. We say we're powerless, and then we go out and try to fix ourselves. What's that about? You know? So if I'm powerless, man, I need him, and that's what the steps showed me.
Now, yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I believe wholehearted the same way. Jesus is my higher power. When I get a sponsee, though, and sometimes they don't have the same agreement, that they haven't come
sure.
to that agreement, they haven't taken the God of their fathers. And all we're asked to do is to get a higher power. And some take something profane out of the natural world, and you know, some of them take the most absurd entities. And I think a lot of it has to do with how unique. If we're really unique, we need a special, unique higher power, someone
mm-hmm.
that doesn't have. If no one's ever had this one before, I had a fellow came in and he was new to the area as well as recovery, and his higher power was his GPS, because he needed his GPS to get around town, and that became his higher power. I wrote to that, and I said, well, maybe he should have called it his God positioning device, you know, to get in. But, you know, it's okay. Bill W. said this was spiritual kindergarten. So for the
yeah.
folks that, you know, you could say, if Jesus is your higher power in a meeting, you can say it. No one is going to object to that. And if they do, if you ever notice, Jesus is the only name that's going to cause a passionate response for good or for ill. That's their problem, not mine.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to say that you have a rock, the only thing I ask you to do is don't throw it at me. Other than that,
sure.
if that's what
you
need to get started, that's great, folks. You know, we're not going
Absolutely.
To push... We're not going to push religion on you. This isn't a religious organization bent on your conversion. We have no interest in that at all. Our interest is so that we could be of maximum service to God and to our fellows. That's our main interest. And the reason we do that, and it's twofold. One is that it keeps me sober. Yay! Two, it puts me in conscious contact with my Creator, which more and more becomes more and more important. So now you did a fourth step. How'd that look like, Monty?
Oh, boy. Well, the first time around on that, I wrote this wonderful novel. I got on my computer. I did graphics. I did charts
oh,
and
yeah.
arrows and all this crazy. And I put this wonderful binder together, and I took it to my sponsor, and he said, I'm really not interested in that. I said, what? And
what?
He goes, you're trying to intellectualize, Monty. He says, you've got all these charts and these graphics. It's very beautiful. He said, I just want you to talk to me. I just talk to me from your heart, not from this binder thing. Because, dude, I wasn't thinking right. I was trying to impress the guy. And later on he looked at it, but at first he said, just talk to me from your heart. Let's just talk. And so once I began to do that, then he began to look at the thing. But I was trying to use the thing as some sort of way to impress him. I mean, I was still really immature, you know. But then when we did get through it and all, it was a scary process. I had lots of abandonment issues, so here was one more time where I was going to reveal things to somebody that I had done before in my past in my life from some very difficult things. I was raped when I was younger. I mean, some great stuff that was really ugly, and I thought, if this guy abandons me and I tell him these things, working through this fourth step and this fifth step, it's going to crush me. And I told him, I says, don't you dare abandon me. And he looked at me and he said, I can't promise you that.
Mm.
And so we went back and did the third step again, third step prayer. And he says, the only one that promises you that he's never going to leave you or forsake you is God. He said, I can't promise you that, Mark. And I got it. So every time we met, we invited God into, not like God needs an invitation, but you know what I'm saying. We brought God into the picture. And you are right, brother. I mean, as a starting point, anybody can be from anywhere and come into this thing. And I don't believe it's my job to make converts. I believe it's my job to make disciples. But it's God's job to make converts, because I can't convict anybody. I can't. I can share. I can do it. But you know what? God's got to speak to the person's heart. I can't. I mean, I can say talk all day until I'm blue in the face and probably talk myself right out of a friendship.
I couldn't agree more. It's the sponsor's job. Initially, I tell my sponsees this. I says, you know, most of the fellas I work with attain and maintain long-term sobriety. So I take on a larger role, really, than I'm supposed to, but he needs somebody initially. My job after that is to get him dependent on first the group and then on God. The sponsor
they've got to understand that they've got to step outside of themselves. You know, if I can get somebody to understand that left to their own stuff, if they could just get that basic idea, even if it is a rock, okay, we can work that out later. We can get through that later. But let's get the whole idea of the fact that you can't do it. Then we're moving in the right direction. And I think a person, if they truly are working through the steps with somebody that has done that, and they truly are taking it literally right from the book, I think they will come to a place, a crossroads in their lives, where they're going to make a personal decision about God. And we're not going to have to cram anything down their throat. And I think God will guide them into that position. And at some point, they're going to have to make a decision, and the decision is going to be theirs.
A good point. I like to tell folks, the big book is based on, originally they were considering calling it the James Club.
James Club, yeah.
Because yeah. there was so much from the book of James, which is Martin Luther wanted to get rid of the book of James. He called it a gospel of straw, which is, you know, everybody's got opinions. we have a lot, there's a lot in there. It's faith without works. Asking God, you know, James 1:5, all you have to do is ask God and he'll give it to you unbraidedly. But the thing is, I think it's always good to remember, we turn towards God and then he turns towards us. I believe we're saved by grace after all that we can do, not after all that we can talk, not after all that we can think, not even after all that we can pray. The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. So we take an action, and then God manifests himself in our life because we've asked him to. We even say all you have to do is be willing to be willing. The little mustard seed, even a smaller than a mustard seed, is sufficient to get you started. God is that big. He's that powerful, but you got to make the turn. Monty?
Yeah. Hey, you know the story of the prodigal son? The prodigal son guy takes off, you know. He turns and makes one step, just one step towards his father, and guess what happens? The father comes running. and I mean, and meets him right where he's at. He just took one step.
That's a good point. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
But he had to take that one step, you know. But you know, with the radio station thing, may I tell you about that? How that happened?
Oh no, please take it. Yeah, what? You know, I wanted you to do as much with the as you wanted to, but this is your interview, so go for it.
Okay. I was at a 12-step meeting one day 8 years ago, a little over 8 years ago, and I had I've been on online since being online came to be, and I was writing articles on a website called Sponsors. Well, it wasn't a website; it was this email between me and one of my sponsees, and it was called Sponsor to Sponsor because I believe we, in a way, we sponsor each other. And,
sure.
We were going back, and I discovered how to put little graphics on my email. I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. And it just went back and forth. And I don't know what happened. Somehow one of the things I wrote to him, or he wrote to me, got out into cyberspace somehow. And I came home from a 12-step meeting, and I walked in to my room and hear my light on my answering machine was flashing, and I get a call from a gal named Gracie Vanderver. And she is the one who owns the 12-step Sober Cafe, the music website. And she advertises a lot of recovery musicians and so forth. But anyway, she was an agent for a gal named Marianne B. or something like that out of Nashville, who was a recovery recording artist. Now, that's still is one of the best-kept secrets in the world, that there are actually recovery recording artists out there, lots of them. And 8 years ago, it was really quite a secret. And so she says, Monty, I'm calling because Mary Lynn B., she read this article you wrote, and I read it too, and I think you're really out in left field. I think you're out of line with it, and da 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 da. And all I was doing was talking about the book, you know. And I didn't take any offense to that because she says, but here's the thing. We like the way you put it together so well. Man, it made us really think. Have you ever thought about doing radio? And I said, well, no, not really. She says, well, do you like to talk? And I said, are you kidding? Absolutely. She says, do you like to argue? I said, yeah, probably more than I should. Are you opinionated? Yeah. I mean, we just went on, do you like to read? I said, I love to read. She said, man, you should do something with this. I said, I have no idea how. So she put me in touch with a guy named Tom Sumner in Virginia Beach. Tom knew how to do all this stuff. He knew how to do stuff before the internet knew how to do stuff. And he walked me through for a year. He walked me over the phone and trained me on how to do radio production. He helped me raise funds to get equipment, and most of our stuff's been donated, and we went from, you know, really cruddy $20 microphones to $200 microphones in about 6 months, and, you know, booms and the whole nine yards, and things just started coming together. We did one show on Friday called Interview Friday, and then it went so well and got such good responses, I thought, well, maybe we'll do another show. And what happens, you know, because lots of alcoholics and addicts are really manic, you know, well, I'm no different. All of a sudden, every day of the week was being taken up. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, what have I done? I created a monster. And it took off like wildfire. I couldn't believe it. We called it Take 12 Radio. We went from sponsor to sponsor to Take 12 Radio because it took me, didn't just take me 12 steps, it took me 12 really horrible relapses before I actually got set free. Let's put it that way. Before I actually recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, it took 12
relapses.
Yeah, 12 of them. So
wow.
I called the radio show Take 12 Radio. And because my friend Neil Scott with Recovery Coast to Coast up in Seattle says, how many chances do you give an alcoholic? Answer, as many as it takes. That took me 12. So we put this thing together. I say we because of the support of my wonderful wife, who put up with my long, long hours in doing this, and my two sons, and put this thing together. And it's pretty much a solo act You know, I've had people in here, volunteers, people doing service work, putting music sets together and things like that. But for the most part, it's me doing it. And it got to be extremely demanding. People were flying me out to here and there and everywhere to cover their events, and we'd have to pre-record everything and then upload it right from the site. And I mean, it's a lot of crazy work. One of my relapse signs, you guys, is getting too busy doing good things.
Mm.
And so I had
to put
on brakes. And I said, you know what I need to do? I need to make myself spiritually accountable to my pastor and my sponsor to call me on my stuff and say, okay, are you going to bed by 11 o'clock? No. Then you know what? You need to stop. Okay, I'll go to bed by 11 o'clock. Things like that. And they had to hold me to the fire. Otherwise, I'd be in deep weeds. So I have that accountability. The show, every show that we do is solution-focused. Sunday, we have a recovered addict pastor, Mitch Bourgeois, from Lebanon Four Square Church. We record his message and put that on every week. On Monday, we have Speaker Monday, which is speakers from all over the world. Tuesday is the AA History Show with Dick B. Wednesday is Open Forum Wednesday, which is myself and two other people. It's very controversial because it goes back to old school stuff.
There you go.
Yeah, it's old school stuff. And I'm not talking about pseudo old timers, you guys. I'm talking about the founder stuff. And we take it right back, not even further back to basics. We take it back to the original manuscripts and a lot of stuff that you will not find out of New York today. You won't find them. They're the best kept secrets in the world. Here, I'll give you an example really quick. You know when Bill said, when he had his white light experience, he said that, so this was the God of the preachers? Guess
right.
What? That's not what he said. They changed it. The original, what he originally said was that he had the white flash. God spoke to him audibly and said, Bill, you have been set free. I am the God of the scriptures. That's what he said.
Wow. I believe that.
Pretty powerful stuff. So we talk about stuff like that. And people don't have to like it, but it is what happened. You know, the guy that came in drunk to Bill's office demanding that he get stopped this God stuff. And he recanted, and he did this whole God as we understand him thing. And people say, yeah, that was great. No more God stuff. They found him later sober in a hotel with a Gideon Bible giving advice to Christ. But you're not going to hear that story.
No, that's a shame. I think the reason we do that, or I'll take responsibility, is that they're afraid that the novice will come in who's spiritually bankrupt. I came in spiritually bankrupt. And what I've realized is that, and you'll see it in people's eyes, they'll come in, there'll be darkness in their eyes. The eyes are the windows to the soul, make no mistake. And they come in dark, and then spirituality is more than just uncomfortable, it's painful, like when shadows recoil from the light. So they're afraid that if they go too deep into the spiritual realm too soon, these folks are going to fly. But I'll tell you this.
And I can agree with that, because you try to set a broken leg too quickly, you find somebody that fell off of out of a building and they're laying on their back. What they tell you? If you don't know what you're doing, don't touch them.
You
cause more damage. The thing is, there's got to be a place though. There's got to be a resource somewhere where people can get to this stuff. I don't think that today's meetings are that place. I don't think we can do that. But I believe there's got to be a resource. So folks like yourself, folks like Dick B, folks like our show, those are places where we can hear that stuff, and it's not confrontational. It's not,
threatening.
It's not threatening, because you can turn it off. You don't want to have to walk out of your meeting. But anyway, so that's what we do on Wednesday. Thursdays is Brian Duncan, multi-Dove Award winner Brian Duncan. What a great guy. Sex addict in recovery and at the height of his Christian contemporary career, was struggling and nobody knew it. And now he's open and honest. He's married. He's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful guy. And he does a 30-minute program. Friday's Interview Friday, where we interview people like you do, you know. And we've got authors. You know, Artie Kornfeld from Woodstock and Steven Tyler from Aerosmith and things like that. But the people that we really get the punch with that's really awesome, and I heard you say this, is the regular Joe. It's sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Those are the most powerful shows. Saturday is a workshop thing that we're doing, that we're putting together now, and it's going to be different people in the people that are in 12-step recovery of some kind, but are also leaders in the addiction and alcoholism field that get it. They understand the spiritual dilemma and the spiritual solution. They're going to be doing workshops on Saturday, and we have a couple of shows that are really awesome. Walking Through the Big Book with Chris Schroeder, the number two most downloaded speaker in the country, does that, and Walking Through the 12x12 with Chris Schroeder, we're working on right now.
How do I get a hold of you now? How do I listen to this? Where do I go?
Okay, the website is Take 12 Radio, that's TAKE, the number one, the number two, radio.com, take12radio.com. And people can go to that. They can go to that on their smartphone. If you have an Android run phone, there's a way you can download a Flash Player on your phone, so you can listen to the shows, or just hold down the download MP3 link. Just keep your finger on it, and it'll pop up and start playing. All the other phones it doesn't have any problem with. We also play recovery and positive music 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Do you have an app yet? Have you put an app together for Take 12?
An app? Well, I'm working with Homestead right now on something that's similar to that, and I'm having a difficult time. It makes the website a smartphone friendly, so you don't get the whole website on there. You just get the main pieces. And it's kind of a struggle. Now, if I go out and try to do an app, it can be very expensive, one on my own. And this is the thing I want people to know. I don't get paid doing this. Every donation we get, which is few and far between, every donation we get goes to keep the show on the air, goes to pay for the office materials and to keep up the equipment and stuff like that, and goes to... if I'm asked to come somewhere to a seminar to interview people and they can't pay to have me come out, it'll go to the travel expenses. When I say travel expenses, I'm talking about the cheapest plane and the cheapest floor to sleep on. We'll gladly do that. We're glad, you know, I get asked to speak a lot, and I'm always ready to go do that. But so we just want people to know that we're not making any money off recovery. And there are people, you know, a man is worthy of his hire. I believe that. And but at the same time, I want people to know nobody's getting. I know you're not. I mean, nobody's getting rich doing this stuff. What we're doing is getting rich spiritually by doing this stuff.
Yeah.
This is an act. This is a passion and an act of love that you do and I do and Howard's doing. You know, we're doing this stuff because we want to see people get well.
Right, and we found that to be the great. When we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. You've heard me once, and I'll probably say it again before I'm dead, but I really believe that's the case. I consider this my mission. Do you remember Searcy? You remember Searcy, don't you?
Yeah.
They called him the Lone Eagle. I have his story on there. He was with – I was fortunate enough to hear him twice at the 24-hour club in Austin at two different times. It was miraculous that I got the two times. One was – about when the 12 traditions were first introduced on the back of an envelope, I called Pushing the Envelope, gave it to Cersei.
Yep.
Cersei sometimes was Bill W.'s sponsor, and sometimes he was Bill W.'s sponsee because they traveled a lot together. And, you know, when the need of the bleed occurred for accountability, you need a sponsor. That's why you always have a sponsor. You don't ask someone to be your sponsor. The first question you ask them is, do you have a sponsor? If they don't have a sponsor, they're not working the steps, and they can't sponsor you. So move on. You know, there's other certain questions. I have it on the website, an interview for a sponsor. This is the way we do business now, so that's why I addressed it that way. But the big
book
does say, go find a prospect and start working on them. What Cersei did was he made his life a mission, not an intermission. And this guy was 90 and 91 when I met him. He was about 6'2" or 6'3". He was a very big man. He was the largest man of that age I had ever seen. Because most folks who reach that vaunted age are small and frail. He was huge. I mean, he when he was on his little motorized cart, he looked like a frog on a teacup. And then he'd have his walker, and he'd overlook the street savvy alcoholics, and he would just tower over them. And you know what? He would go anywhere, anytime that he was asked. And he was 90-something years old. He'd get on the bus. He would get on the plane. He'd get in a car. You picked him up and drove him there. He would tell you the story. He would go to conventions, or he would go to a 24-hour club. 24-hour club, folks, these are the guys that are just coming off the street and need a couch to lay on. He'd go talk to them. He made no exception to when his service was available to everyone that requested it. Howard, do you have anything?
Well, I've really enjoyed this program, and I'd like to listen to it again. It's terrific stuff. And by the way, to our listeners, everything's archived, and it's just a terrific public service. Joseph doesn't make a dime off of this website. In fact, it costs him thousands, and I pat him on the back for that. Joseph?
Yeah, I want to echo that too, Joseph. I want to echo that too, because people don't realize how much this stuff costs to do this stuff. And, you know, I don't have any hair left. I don't know about you, man, but, you know, I turn this all the financial stuff over to God, and I take it back just about as soon as I turn it over because I'm human. But God bless your heart, man, for doing what you're doing.
You know, thank you, guys. It's very humbling for you to say that, but that's enough about me. Would someone else like to talk about me?
I love that. Hey, I want to say Joseph, can I say one thing about what we don't do at Take 12 Radio?
Sure, please.
Okay, I want the listeners to really understand this, because I get email every single week about how I've broken traditions here and broken traditions there and so forth and so forth. And I want to comfort people and encourage them. We are, Take 12 Radio is tradition-safe broadcasting. What that means is it means that when we have people on as our guests, we ask them to do one of two things. If they are associated with a particular 12-step program and they want to mention that is fine. But please don't use their last name. Or,
sure,
if they want to speak in generalities and not be specific, then use their last name all they want to. As long as they do that, then we don't have the tradition police jumping down our throat. And even though we're media and that people will read what it says in the information pamphlets to the media, we are not responsible for holding to the traditions. But because I am a member of a 12-step fellowship, and people will not hear me say which one, I'll tell them I've been doing an AA meeting, I heard this at an AA meeting or whatever, but I won't tell you which one I belong to. But because I am owner of the station and that, I feel integrity demands that other than what we are legally bound to by the FCC and our station, that which is just a legal statement, that's why I'm the Monty Man. That's, you know, and now you introduced me as Monty Meyer, and that's fine. But you notice I haven't said what program I'm associated with. And that's because whether I agree or disagree or I think it needs to be the scriptures need to be rewritten or this or that, it doesn't really matter. The fact is I just want to make sure that we're above board with that so people don't get excited, because enough people get excited as it is. We're not associated with any particular
anybody. I like to say sometimes when I'm in different addictive areas, I'll say my name is Joseph G. and I'm a refugee from several 12-step programs. Pick one. if you can overdo it, do it to excess, or have more than one, count me in.
I hear you. People tell me, they say, I don't want anybody saying that they saw me at a such meeting. I said, well, if somebody asks where they saw me, you can tell them.
You know, Monty, I look at it this way. And matter of fact, on the website, and this is pretty ballsy, I wrote to the traditions. I have the tradition there, and then I wrote to the traditions using other traditions and the steps and other understandings and tried to keep it simple. It's hard to write to something simple because you see your tendencies to make it complicated. But I think I've had people in the program look at it, and it's a good, it kind of clarifies it, I think, a little bit more. But all the traditions really only need to answer one question. Does it divert us from our primary purpose, or does it help us? That's the only question that's really important to be answered by all the traditions. Dr. Bob didn't want the traditions initially. I have that on there. I got that from Dick B. Because he was afraid that it would give authority to the to the GSO, where authority, and I've seen it happen. People have taken the traditions, eschewed them, and used them as they were not supposed to have been used. And if we're going to tear ourselves up, if the fellowship is going to tear themselves up, we're going to tear ourselves up from the inside. It's not going to come from the outside. So Rum Radio is about that. It's about getting back to basics, where the big book said 50% got it right away, the other 25% later, and the other 25% was still floating around. That was good numbers, folks. That's not what my experience is today, but we can get back to that. It's sponsorship is the key. Yeah, sponsorship is the key. One alcoholic working with another. You know that the icon, the man on the bed icon? You've seen that, right? Everybody's seen that? Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have the cast of characters. We have supposed to depict Dr. Bob, Bill D., who's an attorney, and our chief architect, Bill W., and it was painted in 1955, but it depicts an incident that happens in 1935, and the foreground has a book in his hand. It's before the writing, the publishing of the big book. And usually the only books that were allowed in that hospital were Bibles. So more than likely, that fellow in the foreground had a Bible in his hand. We had two acts, so we had a doctor, a lawyer, and an Indian chief. And Bill D. was number three in AA. And remember this, it was one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. That is the best tool we have to this day. The one immunity we have from alcohol is intensive work with another alcoholic. That activity works when other activities fail. Amen. Thank you so much, Monty, for your time. This has been great. It's one of our premier shows. I would like to, Harold, really good show. I'm going to even listen to it. I think again myself.
Well, I want to plug you too, because on the 22nd of this month, I will be interviewing Joseph on our station at TakeTwelveRadio.com, and he'll be able to get it on the archives too. But I want to let people know that, so you're going to hear his story.
Oh, cool. Yeah, you know, there's a Spring Branch up here. The lady won't let me tell my story. She's got people there with a year or 2 years. I said, I got 16 years. She won't let me tell my story. I says, Elaine, why won't you let me tell my story? She won't give me an answer. I know why.
Bless her heart.
Yeah, I know. I pray. She's an attorney. She's married to a doctor.
Second, 2013. That'll be great. I'll tune in.
So thank you again, Monty. I'd like to close with this, rumradio.org. We're in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,700 plus towns, cities, and villages. and we're approaching 300,000 hits to the website. There's no money being made. We're anonymous to the 11th tradition because we believe that's the way that program members will respond to a Back to Basics program, some good stuff, spiritual understanding. It's all Big Book and 12 and 12. I've had Big Book thumpers scan the thing from fore to aft looking for a problem, can't find it because there's none there. This is a God-driven work done for the love of the fellowship. So remember, if you have any questions on sponsorship, it's rumradio.org. Thanks, guys, and I hope you have a really good night. Good night.
God bless.
God bless you.
Thank you.